Part 7 of this talk is about prophecies in Kitab-e-Aqdas. In Kitab-e-Aqdas in 1873, Baha'u'llah wrote, quote, O banks of Rhine, we have seen you covered with gore inasmuch as the swords of retribution were drawn against you, and you shall have another turn. And we hear lamentation of Berlin, though she be today in conspicuous glory. End of quote. Now, after two world wars, we clearly can see the fulfillment of his prophecies revealed nearly half a century before the First World War. The severe oppressive treaties in both wars raised the lamentation of Berlin. About Tehran, he states in Kitab-e-Aqdas, quote, Let nothing grieve thee, O land of Tal, in Tehran, for God hath chosen thee to be the source of the joy of all mankind. The day is approaching when thy agitation will have transmuted into peace and quiet calm. Thus had it been decreed in the wondrous book. End of quote. This prophecy makes a believer to be proud, coming from Tehran in contrast to the present shame of other Persians in view of recent events. He could foresee the gap between the death of the Guardian and the election of the Universal House of Justice. In the passage about Hubbullah in Kitab-e-Aqdas, he states that, quote, The endowments dedicated to charity revert to God, the revealer of signs. No one has the right to lay hold on them without leave from the dawning place of revelation. After him, the decision rests with the Ahsan, meaning branches, and after them, with the House of Justice, should it be established in the world by then. Otherwise, the endowments should be referred to the people of Baha. End of quote. You noticed he mentioned Ahsan, meaning branches. Both Abdu'l-Baha and Shoghi Effendi were Ghosn, or branch. Then we saw in 1957, when Shoghi Effendi passed away, how, for over 5 years, the hands of the cause, as custodians of the faith, conducted the affairs of the faith, including the administration of Hubbullah, until the Universal House of Justice was elected in 1963. About the next manifestation in Kitab-e-Aqdas, he confirms what he had previously revealed on the first day of Rizwan, as well as in Adrianople in the Kitab-e-Badi, with the following words. Quote, Whoso layeth claim to a revelation direct from God, ere the expiration of a full 1,000 years, such a man is assuredly a lying impostor. We pray God that he may graciously assist him to retract and repudiate such a claim. End of quote. According to a tablet from Baha'u'llah, written to a believer on the first day of his declaration in the Garden of Rizwan, he made three very important statements. 1. Forbidding the use of sword in his dispensation in defense of their lives for the sake of their faith. 2. No manifestation of God will appear before the expiration of 1,000 years. 3. The advent of a new day with infusion of a fresh capacity into all beings. He prophesied in Kitab-e-Aqdas the New World Order, also referred to by the Bab in the Bayan with these words, quote, Well is it with him to fixeth his gaze upon the order of Baha'u'llah and rendereth thanks unto his Lord. توبال من ینظرو الى نظم بهاءالله و یشکرو ربه. بهاءالله in the mother book states, quote, "The world's equilibrium has been upset through the vibrating influence of this most great, this new world order. Mankind's ordered life has been revolutionized through the agency of this unique, this wondrous system, the like of which mortal eyes have never witnessed." For an ordinary man, it was very difficult in 1873 to see the upheaval of the century ahead. Baha'u'llah states, quote, "A new life in this age stirring within all the peoples of the earth, and yet none had discovered its cause or perceived its motive." End of quote. With release of power and revelation of such statements, the quiet conditions of the world change for the worse to prepare for the birth of the new world order. The following is a good analogy. As soon as the new life begins in an egg, the condition inside the egg changes radically. The alteration of the contents of the egg, which was good food for the people, are not pleasing anymore. But the new life thrives on the altered contents until the shell breaks open and a new creature is born. All that is left of the egg is its broken shell. This is very much the state of the world today. The ever-worsening of corruption, immorality, anarchy, and chaos is not pleasing, but we are witnessing a new world community in its embryonic form growing within the womb of the old. A lotus is growing out of a swamp. In another instance, Baha'u'llah states, quote, "And when the appointed hour is come, there shall suddenly appear that which shall cause the limbs of mankind to quake. Then, and only then, will the divine standard be unfurled and the nightingale of paradise warble its melody." End of quote. We read Baha'u'llah's prophecies exactly like a person who is taken to a garden by a gardener. The gardener is talking about different flowers, shrubs, and trees, and all the person sees is indentations in the soil indicating where the seeds are planted. The eighth part will briefly cover the laws and ordinances of Kitab-e-Aqdas. Mirza Abul Fazl, the greatest scholar of the faith whose writings rank second to the holy writings and the writings of the Guardian, states that the laws of God in the holy books of the past and those of the Kitab-e-Aqdas may be divided into three categories. First category, devotional laws and ordinances such as prayer, fasting, Hubbullah, and pilgrimage. As mentioned earlier, these laws are not in a sense a law in its rigid and literal meaning defined in dictionary as a rule of conduct enforced by a controlling authority. Such laws are not enforced with pressure from an institution, but rather they are a spiritual obligation based on the love of the believer. Second category, the laws which basically benefit the individual, such as cleanliness, writing of will, and burial. Third category, the laws which concern the society, such as forbidden things, punishments for crimes, and establishment of house of justice. The laws and principles ordained by Baha'u'llah in his writings constitute the two pillars sustaining the institutions of the world order of Baha'u'llah. The guardian, distinguishing the laws from the principles, describes them as, quote, the warp and woof of the institutions upon which the structures of his world order must ultimately rest, end of quote. This means one cannot consider himself a true believer by having recognized Baha'u'llah and by doing just the devotional laws, yet staying aloof from the administrative part. In this regard, in Kitab-e-Aqdas, Baha'u'llah states, quote, they whom God endued with insight will readily recognize that the precepts laid down by God institute the highest means for the maintenance of order in the world and the security of its peoples. He that turneth away from them is accounted among the abject and foolish. End of quote. Today, being in embryonic stage of development, we cannot visualize the age of glories when teachings and laws of Baha'u'llah will govern the life of man on this planet. Then and only then will the wisdom and significance of all the laws of Kitab-e-Aqdas will become manifest. Remember, we are like the onlookers to the garden with some indentations where the seeds are planted, and we see a few stakes here and there. Some, in our naiveness, could criticize the coarseness of the stakes or object to the pattern where the seeds were planted, not knowing the size and shape of each plant or tree. The time does not permit discussion of laws and ordinances one by one. We are very lucky to know English and must be most grateful for the translation of Kitab-e-Aqdas in English. I remember in my youth in Persia, only by learning Arabic or attending specific classes, one could learn about the contents of Kitab-e-Aqdas. The quotation from the Guardian in God Passes By, summarizing Kitab-e-Aqdas, which was read in part 3 of this talk, is a treasure. Read it over. In the remaining time, three major laws of prayer, fasting, and Hughullah will briefly be discussed, and a few words mentioned about health, education, teaching, and Mashghul Askar. According to Kitab-e-Aqdas, fasting and obligatory prayer constitute the two pillars that sustain the revealed law of God. Abdu'l-Bahá states that prayer and fasting are the causes of awakening and mindfulness and are conducive to protection and preservation from tests. According to the Guardian, the obligatory prayers, the Tablet of Ahmad, and the long healing prayer are invested with special potency and significance. Obligatory prayer is one of the rituals in the faith, and the other is the prayer for the dead, when one recites it in congregation with everyone standing. Obligatory prayer is a private devotional act and must be performed with all of its rites, mainly ablution and facing towards Qibla, or the point of adoration. Baha'u'llah appointed his own resting place as the Qibla. It is preferable to stand while reciting the short prayer. The long and medium obligatory prayers have their specific positions and movements. Abdu'l-Bahá states that one may say the morning obligatory prayer as early as dawn. Once every 24 hours, one must repeat Allahu Akbar 95 times, which also requires ablution. However, one may use one ablution for reciting the prayer, followed by repeating Allahu Akbar 95 times. For every obligatory prayer missed, one does ablution, prostrate, and say, Glorified be God, the Lord of might and majesty, of grace and bounty. For just glorified be God. After that, one sits cross-legged and repeat 18 times, Glorified be God, the Lord of kingdom of earth and heaven. If one had missed 2 obligatory prayers, one prostrates twice, and with the last prostration repeat the first verse, but only say the second verse 18 times in cross-legged position. Excused are those below age 15, over 70, ill, and women during their period. At that time, women should do their ablution and repeat 95 times, Glorified be God, the Lord of splendor and beauty, between noon and the next noon. On the subject of fasting, I wish to state that it must be done with the spirit of joy, and it is abstinence from food, water, and smoking. Excused are those before age 15, over 70, ill, pregnant, nursing, women during period, those engaged in heavy labor, or on a journey for more than 9 hours. During the fast, when a woman is menstruating, she should do the ablution and repeat 95 times the same verse, Glorified be God, the Lord of splendor and beauty, between noon and the next noon. Exemption from the laws of prayer and fasting does not mean prohibition. In regard to Hawwallah, the Bab ordered his followers to give priceless gifts to him whom God shall make manifest. Baha'u'llah abrogated that law and absolved the believers from this obligation. Haji Shah Muhammad Manshadi was a devout Babi. When he recognized Baha'u'llah as the Promised One, he divided some of his wealth among his children and took the rest as a gift to Baha'u'llah, who kindly accepted it but returned it to him. He gave him the title of Aminul Bayan, or the Trustee of Bayan. He was the one who handed the tablet to Badi to be taken to the Shah. In his travel to Iran, he became acquainted with Haji Abul Hasan Ardakani. Both were from Yazd. That time was the early part of Baha'u'llah's incarceration in Akka, and anyone suspected of being his follower was not permitted to enter the city. Such was Nabil Azam, the great historian, who had to live in caves in Haifa. Haji Shah Muhammad, who trusted Haji Abul Hasan and had made him his assistant, traveled in disguise of Arab with a few loaded camels, and recognized they were permitted in the city. When Baha'u'llah heard about their arrival, they were told to see him in the public bath, but not to show any sign of recognition. Haji Abul Hasan had never seen Baha'u'llah, and with the first glance at him, his body shook and collapsed and had to be taken out with his head bleeding. On one of their trips, Haji Shah Muhammad, the first trustee, was killed and Haji Abul Hasan was injured but survived. Baha'u'llah appointed him as Amin-e Ilahi, or the trustee of God. He is also known as Haji Amin. His services extended as trustee of Hawwallah from the latter part of ministry of Baha'u'llah to ministries of Abdul Baha and early years of Shoghi Effendi. He was appointed hand of the cause posthumously by the Guardian, who also designated him as one of the 19 apostles of Baha'u'llah. Abdul Baha named one of the doors of the shrine of the Bab after his name. When invited into friends' homes, he did not approve of multiple dishes and usually asked one kind of food and very simple. Usually he used to say, just add some water to your soup. Baha'is refer to it as soup of Haji Amin, which usually ended to be a delicious meal. Following him, Haji Ghulam Reza became trustee with the title of Amin-e Amin, and after him, Hand of the Cows, Waliullah Varga, followed by his son, Hand of the Cows, Ali Muhammad Varga, the present trustee. He is the third generation Hand of the Cows. Baha'u'llah states, quote, "Say, O people, the first duty is to recognize the one true God, magnified be his glory. The second is to show forth constancy in his cause, and after these, one's duty is to purify one's riches and earthly possessions according to that which is prescribed by God." End of quote. In another tablet, he states, quote, "And whoso fulfilleth the things he hath been commanded, divine blessings will descend upon him from the heavens of bounty of his Lord." End of quote. And then he gives these words of warning, quote, "O people, act not treacherously in the matter of Allah." End of quote. Baha'u'llah in another tablet states, "Nothing is more reprehensible than to beg for funds in the name of God." During his time, Baha'u'llah, commenting on Hughullah, stated, quote, "There is a prescribed ruling for Hughullah. After the House of Justice hath come into being, the law thereof will be made manifest in conformity with the will of God." End of quote. So you see, things do not happen at random. Everything follows a prescribed pattern, like the implementation of the law of Hughullah for the West. We can easily find a parallel to the statement of Baha'u'llah about Hughullah when he states, quote, "The benefit of such deeds reverteth unto the individual." End of quote. That means paying of Hughullah. Let us examine a tree. The blossoms, the flowers, and fruit are produced as a result of sustenance which comes from the soil. We can say, the existence of the tree depends on the soil. Every year it sheds its leaves and gives back to the soil a portion of his wealth. The fallen leaves kill the weeds under the tree and later act as a fertilizer for the tree. It is immaterial to the soil if the tree sheds or not. The tree itself is the beneficiary. Hughullah is the material aspect of the covenant of Baha'u'llah, the spiritual obligation, and the giver is the beneficiary. Concerning healing, in Kitab-e Aqdas, Baha'u'llah directs his followers to consult a skilled physician when ill. After such consultation, to take the remedy and at the same time pray for healing. Whenever a member of his family became ill, he asked for a physician to come. He does not advocate faith healers and similar practices. In treating the patients, Baha'u'llah in Lohiteb or the Tablet of Medicine advises the physician first to turn to God and then prescribe the remedy. He states that a physician who has recognized him and is filled with his love will exert such an influence that his mere visit will restore health to the patient. One of these was Agha Mirza Muhammad Rizaye Tabib, in whose honor the above tablet was revealed. He used to cure patients by prescribing very simple remedies. Abdul Baha stated that the science of medicine will be so perfected in the future that most diseases will be treated with foods, herbs, and natural remedies. Shoghi Effendi stated that there is no such thing as Baha'i healers or Baha'i type of healing. In Lohiteb, Baha'u'llah praises the science of medicine as the most meritorious of all sciences, and it is at the end of this tablet where he revealed the most often recited prayer, "Thy name is my healing, O my God, remembrance of thee is my remedy. The power of the Holy Spirit, which has been exclusive to the manifestations of God, can heal without physical means. Christ, the Bab, and Baha'u'llah heal people. Abdu'l-Bahá, on whom this power was bestowed by Baha'u'llah, also healed people when doctors failed. In early days, Abdu'l-Bahá used to prescribe medicine to the sick, but later Baha'u'llah directed him not to do it, so the believers might turn to the medical profession. Mirza Ja'far Yazdi, who was a learned clergy on exile of Baha'u'llah, accompanied the caravan from Baghdad to Istanbul. He was Abdu'l-Bahá's helper by riding to villages and buying their provisions. He went to exile with Baha'u'llah in the barracks of Akka. He became severely ill, and doctors gave up on him and did not visit him anymore. When he breathed his last, Mirza Agha John, Baha'u'llah's secretary, ran to Baha'u'llah with the word of death. Mirza Ja'far's body was limp, and his family around his bed were mourning his loss. Baha'u'llah said, "Go and chant the healing prayer, he will come alive." As the prayer was chanted, he slowly began to move, and in about 1 hour, lifted his head and sat up and began to laugh and tell jokes. Abdu'l-Bahá's remedies included cutting down certain foods, fasting, and a delicious pomegranate sauce. This was from pomegranates grown in the garden of Rezwan near Akka. It was most likely through the will of Abdu'l-Bahá that cure occurred. Dr. Yunus Khan Afrukhte, the writer of Memoirs of 9 years, which he spent with Abdu'l-Bahá in Akka, writes that he became badly ill with severe pain, and he states, "At that time, Dr. Arastu Khan, was visiting and we were staying in the pilgrim house. This doctor treated me with everything he knew, but I was getting worse. After 3 weeks of suffering, one night, the excruciating pain became very bad. The pilgrims could not sleep with my moaning, so 2 hours after midnight, we decided to send the caretaker to Abdu'l-Bahá. I don't know if the master was asleep or awake, but all I know is that when the caretaker came back, I was fast asleep and woke up the next day without any pain. Not having seen the master for all those days, I slowly walked towards his house, but I met him on the road. He inquired about my health and showered me with his bounties. I found it opportune time to beg him for complete recovery. He advised bloodletting by suction cups or phlebotomy, which frightened me. The look on my face showed my fear. He said in an amused voice, 'Good gracious, I want to send you to face the swords of the enemy, and you're afraid of suction cups?' Being outspoken with my blabbing habits, I dared to say jokingly, 'When that happens, God will give me the fortitude. But if I wanted to have the suction cups, why would I come to you?' He smiled, and that was the final remedy for me. I was healed without any physical means." About education, Kitab-e-Aqdas has placed enormous responsibility upon parents and local assemblies to educate the children in academic as well as spiritual education. Abdu'l-Bahá in one tablet states that parents who fail in proper upbringing of their children commit a sin which God cannot forgive. No reason for me to elaborate on emphasis that is placed on education of the girls, since you are all familiar with it. Abdu'l-Bahá warns us not to become over-academic and ignore the virtues, moral values, and the spiritual aspect of the education. Abdu'l-Bahá in another tablet praises the station of devoted teachers and describes their service as true worship of God. He calls them the spiritual fathers of the children they teach. Now we see why Baha'u'llah has honored the teachers by including them in his formulation of inheritance in Kitab-e-Aqdas. They are the only non-member of the family who are beneficiaries. A non-Baha'i teacher does not inherit. Of course, you know that the law of inheritance is only applicable if one does not leave a will. As for the teaching of the cause, Baha'u'llah regards it as the most meritorious of all deeds. In one tablet, he states, quote, God hath prescribed unto everyone the duty of teaching his cause. Whoever ariseth to discharge this duty must needs, ere he proclaimeth his message, adorn himself with the ornament of an upright and praiseworthy character, so that his words may attract the hearts of such as are receptive to his call. Without it, he can never hope to influence his hearers. End of quote. It leaves no doubt, he states, without an upright character, he can never hope to influence his hearers. When teaching his cause, one must present it like offering a gift to a king, with feeling of love and humility, and above all, with readiness to draw from the powers of Baha'u'llah. Baha'u'llah often taught his followers how to teach. The foremost of these instructions was to pray for the seeker and also have him pray for guidance of God. The next was to begin teaching with the accounts about other religions, their history, an account of their founders, similar to what he has written in Kitab-e-Iqan. The last was not to disclose everything about the cause at first, but teach little by little, likening it to the process of feeding an infant. Haji Mirza Haydar Ali, the Angel of Carmel, and the writer of Delight of Hearts, states the following words from Baha'u'llah about teaching the cause. The teacher must have a pleasing disposition and deal with people in a spirit of loving kindness. One should not make the seeker feel defeated, but to acknowledge his point of view and present him with an alternative point of view and invite him to examine it. Trying to win an argument cause the seeker to think of defense rather than listening. These are truly pearls from Baha'u'llah. We must remember that the honor of teaching the cause, which in the past dispensations was given to the religious leaders and the clergy, has now been bestowed on every one of us. To tap on the powers of Baha'u'llah is to have faith in him and assume the position of lowliness in relation to Baha'u'llah's station, the same way that water flows from a higher plane onto a lower one. Then his statement in the hidden words, humble thyself before me, that I may graciously visit thee, will materialize. However, the vital condition for drawing on the powers of Baha'u'llah is to arise to serve the cause. The power to create a new spirit is from the revelation of God. We can act only as channels. Baha'u'llah states about his laws, quote, consider the mercy of God and his gifts. He enjoineth upon you that which shall profit you, though he himself can well dispense with all creatures. Your evil doings can never harm us, neither can your good work profit us. We summon you wholly for the sake of God. End of quote. Now a few words about the Mashroq al-Askar, or dawning place of mention of God. Baha'u'llah in Kitab al-Aqdas has ordained that in every locality, an edifice be built with utmost perfection for the exclusive purpose of worshipping God. In it, only the words of God may be read or chanted. He urges his followers to conduct prayer services in Mashroq al-Askar at the hour of dawn. Later on, Baha'u'llah has explained that prayers are accepted between dawn and sunrise, or even up to 2 hours after sunrise. There is no doubt that in future, when the world order of Baha'u'llah will be established in every city, a sufficient number of houses of worship will be built with a new social pattern regulating people's way of life. Then there will be a balance between spiritual and physical needs. While the Mashroq al-Askar will be the focal point of spiritual activity, around it there will be a cluster of institutions as its dependencies. These dependencies, according to Abdu'l-Bahá, will include hospitals, orphanages, schools, universities, hostels, and similar institutions. The cluster of humanitarian and administrative activities circling around the house of worship combines the spiritual and physical principles of the faith. Shoghi Effendi has stressed that the characteristic nine-sidedness of the house of worship is for the sacredness of number 9 as the number of Baha and perfection, and not for the 9 existing religions. He states, within its chastened walls and in its spiritual atmosphere, the worshippers, free of trapping of elaborate ceremony, worship one true God as manifested in this age in the person of Baha'u'llah. To them, such edifice symbolizes the fundamental verity underlying the faith, namely, the religious truth is not absolute but relative, and the divine revelation is not final but progressive. I repeat, the religious truth is not absolute but relative, and the divine revelation is not final but progressive. And finally, nothing short of direct and constant interaction between the spiritual forces emanating from a house of worship and its social, humanitarian, educational, and scientific aspects of its dependencies will be able to remedy the long suffering of mankind. This was from a letter of Shoghi Effendi in 1929 to the American Baha'is when the Mother Temple was under construction. Such combination of Mashroq al-Askar and its dependencies is called the institution of Mashroq al-Askar. Baha'u'llah has forbidden displays of pictures or statues, as well as ceremonies and use of musical instruments. Only human voice may be heard. The 9th and the last part of this talk is about maturity of man, Baha'u'llah's covenant, and his promise to be with us. In his writings, Baha'u'llah has given 3 signs for the maturity of mankind. 1. The decline in the fortunes of kings. He states in one of his tablets, quote, one sign of the maturity of world is that no one will accept to bear the weight of kingship. End of quote. 2. Discovery of transmutation of elements, or achievement of alchemy. In one tablet, he states that such transmutation and its reverse is possible, but, quote, the knowledge thereof is with us in the hidden book, end of quote. He promises that such discovery will be realized, which will be one of the signs of maturity of mankind, but warns that after its discovery, a great calamity would await the world unless mankind came under his shelter. The third sign or condition mentioned in Kitab-e-Aqdas is the adoption of an international language. This should not be mistaken for the auxiliary language, which is for the near future. It is referring to a single language for the whole world, which will occur in the distant future. The Guardian states that prelude to maturity of mankind is the lesser peace when political unification of nations will take place and wars end. He states that three evolutionary processes simultaneously shall take place. One is maturation of the spiritual assemblies. Two, completion of the buildings of the ark. The last one is the lesser peace. As believers and proponents of the minor plan of God, we have an enormous responsibility towards the first two processes. The last one will be done through the major plan of God, well beyond our control and capacity. Finally, in this dispensation, God's greatest bounty to man has been the revelation of Baha'u'llah and his covenant, namely Abdu'l-Baha and Shoghi Effendi. Our part of this covenant is to recognize Baha'u'llah and obey him and have faith when he states in Kitab-e-Aqdas, quote, be not dismayed, O people of the world, when the day star of my beauty is set and the heaven of my tabernacle is concealed from your eyes. Arise to further my cause and to exalt my word amongst men. We are with you at all times and shall strengthen you through the power of truth. After Baha'u'llah's ascension, the believers were quite disheartened. Abdu'l-Baha comforted them and, to soothe the wound of separation, assured them now that Baha'u'llah's soul was freed from the confines of his physical form, he would be ever more present like the rays of the sun and obscured by the clouds. For the last story, I wish to honor Mr. Adib Tahirzadeh, whose books, The Revelation of Baha'u'llah, were directly quoted throughout this talk, by presenting a story about his honorable father, Haji Muhammad Tahir Malmiri, showing how Baha'u'llah was with him at all times. As a young man, Haji attained the presence of Baha'u'llah in Akka for 9 months and returned to his hometown of Yazd. He lived a full life of 100 years. When Haji received his permission to attain the presence of Baha'u'llah, he went to join a prominent believer from province of Baluchistan for their pilgrimage. They went to the port city by the Persian Gulf to sail for Bombay and via Egypt to go to Akka. To their surprise, they noticed about 100 people from Baluchistan were already there waiting to take a boat going to Arabia for pilgrimage to Mecca. As you know, such pilgrimage is called Hajj, and the one who performs it with all its rites will become Haji. These people became very excited to see the prominent man from their province, and not knowing that he was a Baha'i, they assumed that he also would be going to Mecca with them. Their joy and excitement had no bounds, but caused a problem. The prominent man, not wishing to disappoint them, tried for a week or more to convince Haji to go to Mecca on the way to Akka which also made the trip shorter. But Haji was adamant that his desire was to attain the presence of the beloved and how they should part and each one goes his own way. Finally, this prominent man gave in and told the people that he would not be going with them to Mecca and will go with Haji. On the third day of their arrival in Akka, they were permitted for the first time at the presence of Baha'u'llah. Haji threw himself at the feet of Baha'u'llah, who told him, "Well done. May God bless you." Do you think Baha'u'llah said this because the way Haji threw himself on his feet? No, listen to this. Baha'u'llah said, "People were going to Mecca and you did not go there for the love of God. Instead, you considered coming to Akka to be of prime importance. Truly, your understanding is correct. Pilgrimage to Mecca can be valued only with our permission." While in Akka, he told Baha'u'llah's secretary Mirza Aghajan to mention his request to Baha'u'llah for a tablet or even a few words in his own handwriting, since he had heard that the Bab had said that should any of his followers live during the days of Baha'u'llah, they should try to get a tablet, a line, or even a word in his own handwriting, because such a position would be superior to anything else. Mirza Aghajan refused to give this message to Baha'u'llah on the grounds that he had not taken the pen since he was poisoned. One day when Haji was at the presence of Baha'u'llah, the Blessed Beauty told him that he had written a tablet for him in his own handwriting and that he would receive it. Another time, Haji gave the names of some other believers and asked if a tablet could be revealed for each of them as well. A little later, Baha'u'llah stated that a tablet was revealed for each of those people, but they would be sent to him after his departure. At the end of 9 months of pilgrimage in Akka, before Haji was dismissed, Baha'u'llah directed him to go to Mecca and perform the pilgrimage with all its rites, and so he became a Haji by Baha'u'llah's permission. After his return to Yazd, he was hoping to receive his own tablet with the rest, but the special tablet did not come with the rest, which were in the handwriting of Baha'u'llah's secretary. Sometime later, when Haji's cousin went to Akka, Baha'u'llah sent a message of assurance that Haji would receive that tablet. Many years passed, and Haji, slightly heartbroken but confident, continued his fervent and overzealous teaching activities in Yazd until, because of danger, he decided to leave the city. In the middle of night, as he was going to mount his donkey, a Baha'i woman approached him and gave him a tablet in Baha'u'llah's handwriting and said, 24 years ago, when a believer returned from Baghdad, he gave this tablet to me and said, Baha'u'llah had told him that the recipient would be found later. Now many years had passed since that believer was martyred. Imagine, this tablet was written when Haji was a child. Later on, Abdu'l-Bahá confirmed that this was the tablet Baha'u'llah had specifically revealed for Haji. Haji Muhammad Tahir Maulmiri had no reason to doubt that Baha'u'llah was with him at all times. When Haji was a child, Baha'u'llah revealed the tablet in his own handwriting in his honor. When in the port city, from thousands of miles, his determination not to divert to Mecca was manifest before Baha'u'llah, and finally, in the middle of that eventful night, with great ecstasy, he witnessed the consummation of it all by receiving that special tablet. Now, with great joy, his blessed soul from the Abha kingdom is observing how Baha'u'llah is with his sons, who are among the foremost in rendering services to the cause. It suffices to know that Janabi Adib-e Tahirzadeh, whose books are a treasure house of knowledge, is also a member of the supreme institution, the Universal House of Justice. Friends, Baha'u'llah has promised to be with all of us at all times. What we need to do is to turn to him and tap on his powers with faith, humility, and by arising to serve his cause. The Bab has stated that every religion of God has been endowed with potency to become a world religion. The reason they did not succeed was the failure of their followers to practice the teachings. So, I wish to close with these warning words of the Guardian. Not by the force of numbers, not by the mere exposition of a set of new and noble principles, not by an organized campaign of teaching, no matter how worldwide and elaborate in its character, not even by the staunchness of our faith or the exaltation of our enthusiasm, can we ultimately hope to vindicate in the eyes of a critical and skeptical age the supreme claim of the Abha revelation. One thing, and only one thing, will unfailingly and alone secure the undoubted triumph of this sacred cause, namely, the extent to which our own inner life and private character mirror forth in their manifold aspects the splendor of those eternal principles proclaimed by Baha'u'llah. Friends, the law was written. The translation is given. So let it be obeyed, and let it be done. Thank you.